Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
One alive, one dead. One fictional. It's up to you who you choose. You pick them all. It's up to you who you choose. You pick them all. Who you having? Make it who you wish. This is your dinner party. And it's your guest list.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Guest List with Jake Lambert, the podcast where I interview comedians to find out who would be their perfect dinner party guests. But they can only pick three. One has to be alive, one has to be dead, and one has to be fictional. This week we are joined by Sindhu V. It's such a interesting and fun episode. She clearly not only really thought about her answers, but she clearly really thinks about life. Well, she studied philosophy at Oxford University, which is basically all you need to know. She's an incredible comedian as well. She has done everything, and justifiably so. It was so good to sit and talk with her. We sort of discuss a lot of things, including the fact that we haven't really gigged together much or spent a lot of time together. So it was nice just to finally get to hang out. Please remember to rate and subscribe and like the podcast and share it on social media. It really does make a difference. But most importantly, please enjoy my conversation with Sindhu V.
There are headphones that go here. So what they do
like
is...
the temple...
Yeah, just share where your ear bones are, just right down here. So they put the sound in through your bones, so your ears are free to pick up U-turning cars.
What?
Yes, and it's much, much better because you're allowed, so you can hear while also hearing. I went to pick up my kid from a garden playdate when this was all allowed, and the mom opened the door, the garden, like she has a door, you know, a garden door, to open the door, and she was talking to me, and she had these two black things like this.
Oh my, oh right, so it's like a little cup thing off the side
of
your
head. Yeah, but it's smaller than this. And I was talking to her and then I thought, I can't fucking take it. I said, Richard, what's on your head? I couldn't anymore. And you know, in Corona time, you become a bit weird about asking people how they are. If you see something medically not okay with them,
you can check now.
Yeah, but also you're like, should I say anything? Should I not, you know, because... And I was like, what's on your head? I just couldn't handle it anymore. And she said, oh, these are these and then she took them out. So these are these ambient things in the ear. And I said, why do you have them? She said, because I can listen to my stuff, but I can also, please listen to this, I can also hear the kids. I'm like, you're paying to have shit where you can hear the kids and you're wearing something? Who, what? But then she said it's mainly for people who run.
I see, right. That's clever.
Yeah, but and now I see them everywhere.
Oh, right.
I guess before runners were going by with little, with this, and I was like, I don't give a fuck. Now I'm like, aha!
You see it. Now I'll see it everywhere.
That's like so, that. So
already my AirPods are now out of date.
Big time. Especially big time. I mean, if right. You're running with those, you're asking for it.
Yeah. Well, luckily I only run in the park. I'm like a toddler. I'm not allowed to run outside of the park.
But I think park runs are good because you don't have to worry about traffic and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's the worst thing that's going to happen is a pushchair or a dog.
Yeah, I mean, I like to run when I haven't been running for a long time because I've got all these injuries I have to take care of. But there's a track.
Oh, nice.
I just love running on the track because you can just get into a zone and just...
Yeah, feel. Lovely. Yeah, because now I run around Battersea Park. But beforehand... I was running around Balham and Clapham, and it was all hills. And so
my time since I've moved here, I thought I'd got faster, but obviously what I've got is just flatter surface to run on.
Yeah, well, you know, anything that works. I just find like I've gone from working out and running and all that jazz to really just struggling with walking.
Like, yes.
Partly it's injuries and partly it's just, fuck, I don't know. I'm
just giving up on life.
Like, I don't give a shit. And so I've started walking, but now, of course, I've made the walking into like I want to walk. I know 10,000 steps and all that stuff. And then I want to walk at least 10,000 steps. The other day I woke up early and I forced my husband to go for a walk with me. And it turned into, we walked so far from the house that I was like, I can't walk home, I'll die. So we had to take a taxi. He's like, can we plan this a little better? So we have two kinds of walks. We have the ones where he leads and the ones where I lead. And the ones that he leads is all like, we have to, okay, we're coming back at 10 and then we're going to go here and look and there's the view of this and that and then we're home at 10.
So his is successful and planned. Yours are keeping Uber going during a lockdown.
Exactly. Mine are like we're walking to one end of the earth never to come home or see the children or anything.
I see what your plan is.
No, it's not. It's just like by the time I get to the place, I'm like, but I don't want to go home from here by walk. My husband's like, that's why it's called a walk. So also mine involves so many stops for food, cakes. He's like, I don't, what are we trying to achieve here? And I'm like, we're here walking.
Counterproductive exercise. So I was going to let my cat in.
Oh, hello, cat. What, do you have dogs and cats or just cat?
Just a cat. I'm not responsible enough for a dog. But oh. A cat is sort of, well, I've got the cat and the cat, he got shot in the head. So he's only got one eye. So
you have a cat who got shot?
Yeah, he got shot in the head with it. I don't know. I never found out. And I tried thinking it'd be a really good Edinburgh show. Yeah, he had a metal BB bullet in his head. Like, what's the bullet? He's, can you see him?
Yeah, he's lovely. He's black.
Yeah, he's
If I saw him on any street, I would cross the road. But here, it's fine. I like it. What's his name?
Richard Parker.
Richard Parker, like the tiger.
Like the tiger from Life of Pi. Well done. Great. They judge people by whether they know this.
Who are you talking to who doesn't know who Richard Parker is?
Well, I was going to say, I always ask an audience, but I think it's just a damning indictment of my comedy and my audiences being not very intelligent.
Richard Parker, that book is something else. And also, for me, there's so much resonance with the Indian side of it, you know.
Right, yeah, of course.
And also how much we had to learn Pi in school.
Oh! So like
the 100, it was a big thing. Yeah, and also what we consider tigers and my love for tigers and all the times I've seen them with my dad and, you know,
in the forest. Amazing.
Richard Parker.
Richard Parker, so here he is.
We like Richard Parker. So you had him and he went out one day and came back with a BB gun and his BB bullet in his head.
Yeah, like his eye was like red here. And I took him to the vet thinking a fox or another cat or something had got him. And they were like, no, the bullet's still in there.
And they took out the eye?
Took out the eye, yeah. So he's got like...
Richard Parker, show me.
So can you see?
Oh, so stunning. He's so handsome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a beautiful eye. Richard Parker, I'm sorry you lost that eye. And I hope the people that shot you die. That's that.
That's lovely.
And also rhymes. Lovely eye, I hope they die. But he has lovely eyes. He's a quintessential black cat.
Well, one eye. Yeah, he is. He's... The other one was nice too. he's very good. But yeah, no, so he's
actually
good.
Did you get him when he was a kitten?
Yeah, so he was only, when I got him, I picked him up as soon as you can leave.
Allowed to, him up. Yeah.
So I've had him for, he's four on the 1st of March, he'll be four.
Oh, today's one of our dogs' birthday, Crunchy's 13 today.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll show you, we sang to him earlier. 91.
Oh my God!
He's the oldest in the family. He's older than my dad, who's 87.
Wow! So he's almost going to get a letter from the Queen. Does she do dogs?
Look like a monkey and you smell And then that's the baby there. And she's putting, she made a bracelet for him, and there he is with his bracelet.
Before you sent this video, I was about to say to you, Sindhu, I was going to do something for his birthday, but do you think that's a bit weird? Like, what would you do for your dog's birthday? And before I can ask, I'm showing a video of the entire family singing to him and him being given his own bracelet.
Yeah, he's got a I'm 13 today bracelet. He got peanut butter in the morning. Every time anyone goes in the kitchen, we give him some kind of contraband food, like something that he loves. He is 91 and he's been very faithful, and you know, he's always a saint. He's a saint, and his back legs are going. So now when we have to help him get up. It's not, you know, he's a great guy and he's very dignified. Until he sees a squirrel, but he's still very dignified. but I think Crunchy's 13. So when my middle child was about two and a half when he came.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So he's always known the dog?
Always.
You won't remember life before that?
Well, I mean, the big kids, I think the little one, like Uma, I think has always known him to be home. I think Andreas was probably 4, but he can't really remember what it was like. And then the baby was like born into, I still remember the baby. One of the first things she ever said, because the thing is, when you've got a young kid and 2 older kids, you kind of focused on the older ones. They have to go to school, this, that, you know. So she just lived in the kitchen on this kind of chair. She would just, and we would just be doing stuff. And then I would take the kids to school, and that's when the au pair arrived, or the cook. We had a lady who was like a Indian lady who did the cooking, cleaning, everything. Like, she would come in the mornings while I was running around getting these other kids to school. So the baby would just sit there in the chair. We had a kitchen, and Crunchy wasn't allowed in the kitchen. Because it was a separate kitchen.
Oh, okay, right.
So she would just look at him and he would look at her. And the first thing this kid ever said was, woof, woof. And my husband is like, did she say woof? I'm like, I think so. She literally, we were like, oh. And when she would crawl, and one day she started crawling, and she was very determined. And she went straight over to his water bowl and went, because that's literally all this kid had seen for 2 years was just, you know,
Mowgli.
She really was, and I remember one of the most gratifying moments of my life is, and it's going to sound odd to you, is I was in one room, and in the next, Crunchy would sleep like this across the doorway of the kitchen, and so the baby couldn't get out. But she was like 2 and a half at this point, so she would, and he was 44 kilos, and she was a 2 and a half year old. So she couldn't yet reach over him. He's big,
right.
So you could see she had her head up against him, and she was pushing him. She said, Crunchy, move. Move, Crunchy. And then she said, Crunchy, get the fuck out of my way. And I remember thinking, she must have been 3. I remember thinking, she's got the perfect idiomatic use of this word. Perfect.
And she's finally started learning from you instead of the dog.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I'm so excited about this. I'm so excited because I love food and I love guests.
Perfect. We've got quick fire food questions. And I like you. So we can... exactly. Good. Thanks for tugging that at the end.
But you're one of the people I've always loved to watch and said hi to, but we've never chatted because you're always on your way out, or I'm always on my way out. So this is great.
Exactly. I did think that. I was thinking that we've been together a fair few times, but actually we never had like a car share. We've never properly been in a green room because last time gigged together was COVID. So we were outside. So, Sindhu, yes. There's been a knock at the door. It's the first guest of the evening. It's your live guest. So tell us, who's at the door?
So, hey, look, how can you not know who this is? What's the matter with you, Jake? Look at this. This is my guest. This is a man that I have long had a crush on.
Oh.
And despite his age... And I'm not saying you're old, sir, but you're not young. Despite his age, I think I still would, except now it just be a bit weird. But anyway, he's a wonderful actor. But the thing about him, and I want to say this, the thing about him is he has, over his lifetime, had the capacity to make everyone he has wronged still feel like his friend. And so he's a bon vivant. He's he's got, you know, he's got huge gusto for life, and he hasn't led a very straight-laced life. But the way he's led it is what I aspire to. He's been immoral, but so charming that no one has minded. So I, without further ado, let me introduce you to Jack Nicholson.
Incredible, Sindhu. What a perfect choice.
Oh my God. He is amazing. He's amazing. I'm going to talk about him like he's not here, but that's because he's 87 or 85 and he's fallen asleep, so it doesn't matter. I was reading Angelica Houston's, Angelica Houston from Adam's Family and a number of other movies, autobiography, and she was talking about her love affair with him, but she's still his friend.
Oh, wow. So that's high praise to him then.
Yeah, there's guys I've cheated on and they don't even want to talk to me. So I feel like Jack Nicholson knows something I don't. You know what I mean? And not even like cheated in a big way. I mean, it's not like they were my life soulmate. It was whatever. It was something small. And it was something that could have been overlooked, but they refused and they didn't want to talk about it. They got so upset. And I thought, if I could be as charming as Jack Nicholson, they could still be my friends. I would love to still be their friends, you know? But they don't want to be. And the other thing about Jack Nicholson that I love is that his roles have been both very different, but he's always, you know, you're going to get a Jack kind of performance.
I couldn't put anybody on his level of what he will bring to the role. I was watching him. Actually, I'll tell you what I was watching. It was his, I think it was his golden, oh no, it was his BAFTA video after he won the BAFTA. And he was on the set of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
And he is so handsome and charismatic.
Yeah, stunning.
It's an incredible video. He's there and he's got sort of Danny DeVito and everyone around sort of acting crazy behind him. Yeah. And he sort of smashes through the receptors window to accept his BAFTA. It's phenomenal.
I have to go back. I have to go and watch that. Let me just make a note here. So, you know, so there's that. And also, I want to talk to someone like him. I feel like he's unreconstructed enough that I could say to him that as a man who has gone through a lot of stuff, as an actor of a caliber that I wouldn't ever be able to be, talk to me about your experience so that I can learn something. I think these days people would be afraid to portray themselves as mentors. Men, white men, don't want to be seen as mentors. They just want to be, oh, mea culpa, all the time. But, you know, but I want to say to him, I am allowing you, I beg you, let me see. Because there's something about his personality, something about what we know of his personal life, the kind of, you know, it was the old-fashioned glam.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm deeply fascinated by that, but I also aspire to be so without regard, but with so much love in my heart for everybody that no one's really being treated that well, but everyone likes me.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Is this within your household? Or?
No, over my lifetime. Because the thing is, I think you can be an asshole from a bad place. But I think you can also be someone who is choosing yourself and is able to acknowledge that it might not be the best thing, but that's what you're choosing. Because in order, especially as a performer and a creative person, you put yourself as well as all your energies first. And you don't come from a bad place. You come from a place of self-regard, which I know is a very difficult concept because all self-regard is sometimes seen to be selfish. I don't think so. And I think if you're not coming from a bad place, that's why people that are hurt by you can still sort of let it go. You know what I mean? Recognize that there's always a place in your heart for them, but it's just not the place they wanted or the place you had promised them the night before that it would be. It's kind of changed your mind along the way. So there's something about how loose he is and he was also incredibly generous with his friendships.
Right, okay.
He was a very, very close friend, I think, of Marlon Brando. So the people he was close to, he's always been close to, and that's very much what I'm like. You know, I have a couple of girlfriends. I really should have dumped them by now. Fuck. These women are just, they're just low quality friends, but I can't help it. They're my friends. What else can I tell you about him?
Oh, what's your favorite film of his?
I, as a comedian, obviously, I like As Good As It Gets.
Great choice. It's a great, not where I thought you were going to go, but a good choice.
Because I think you can go to his, like, at that stage in his life, for him to bring that much to that role.
Mm.
Is that the one where he's got, like, Asperger's or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one where he's so unlikable, but so likable. There's so much conflict in that character. And he's funny.
But I think he's almost, if you watch it from the right angle, he's funny in everything.
He is. He is, but not all his roles are cast like that. Like Chinatown, exactly. He's not supposed to be funny. But what a great movie. What a
but
great
just watching
movie.
Him in that world.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's one of those actors, isn't it, where it's him. It's him in a different world. It's not him becoming somebody in that sense. It's almost it's such him, a...
Yeah.
Yeah, which is my favourite way to watch them, I think. My favourite type of acting.
Absolutely. And I think if I had a very close contender for best movie for me with him is Batman, when he was Joker.
Incredible.
Incredible. I mean, the amount of grotesque sex appeal he brought to that character. It was grotesque, but it was sex appeal. I mean, as a woman, I was like, why do I want to have sex with this weirdo? You know, it's a bit like Tony Soprano. I was like, I would totally sleep with this guy. He's not my usual type, but yes, please. You know what I mean? Yeah. So he bought that. And that's why Heath Ledger's Joker never did it for me, because he was too obviously weird. And no disrespect to Heath Ledger, and God rest his soul. But no, so this was, you know, this guy just brought something else. So yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of his. And yeah.
Now, I'm not sure if my memory of now I've almost tricked myself, but I do know there was a thing where Jack Nicholson was told that Heath Ledger had died. Jack Nicholson said, I warned him.
I think I remember reading something like that. I think Heath probably, like, and that's what I mean. I think when Jack Nicholson played Joker, he played it with a certain amount of... If you remember, Jack Nicholson's Joker had a certain grandiose... he didn't have any pathos.
Yes, yeah.
It was all grandiose. And all his pathos was turned into this kind of hatred. But it wasn't pathos. It was fury. Whereas Heath Ledger's was... The pathos was so close to the surface.
Mm.
And I think in comedy, we talk about this thing, high status, low status.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson has never been low status, even as the lunatic in One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest.
Well observed. And clearly not just a fan, but a stalker.
A stalker, but also a student. I mean, yeah. I always watch him and think, because I never thought I'd be an actress. I never thought I'd be a comic. But when I did used to watch him, my mother always used to say that sometimes the shadows of what you are yet to be will come into your peripheral vision, and you'll think, why is this shadow there? And it's because of something that's yet to be. And I remember watching Jack Nicholson always, even when I was in banking, or even when I was just a stay-at-home, not just, but also a stay-at-home mom, and I would be mesmerized. And I used to think, I used to really want to get inside, like, I was so mesmerized by him and a couple of other actors. Amitabh Bachchan is an Indian one, who I didn't invite to dinner because I don't think I could sit in his company. I would just be so nervous. Yeah, he's my favorite actor in the whole world. There's a picture of him.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, he is. And there's not a Jack one on the other wall.
No, because I can't find such a great one of him. But I think with Jack Nicholson, and I think it might have been because one day I was going to be a comic and be on stage and then do acting as well. But Jack Nicholson's ability to be Jack while also bringing complete novelty to every role is just, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's what's the word I'm looking for? It's where it's where there's no one else there. It's
yeah.
What's the word I want there, Sindhu?
Unrivaled.
Exactly that. Unrivaled. There's unrivaled. Nobody there.
There's no one else there. No, but there really isn't. And he's like that in his personal life. Did you see, of course, all the times he's at the Lakers, you know, but did you see the one picture where outside, like in LA, he's had, like when he was 80, 5 years ago, he's lying under a tree, smoking a cigar. Didn't give a fuck.
exactly what you want him to be.
So beautiful. Love that. Love that. Love
amazing that. Choice. Incredible reason and thank description. You. Love it. 10 out of 10.
Thank you. Thank you. Yay.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's another knock at the door. There it is. It's your second guest for the evening. Now, this is your guest who's no longer with us. It's your dead guest. So let us know who's at the door.
Well, I suspect your prediction on this is going to be correct, by the way, whenever we get to it. But it is Prince.
I shouldn't give away any clues, but phenomenal choice. And funnily enough, we talked about him on the last podcast, but not in a way that you're about to talk about him. We were discussing what he might have for breakfast. But tell us what Prince means to you.
Well, I can tell you, he was vegetarian and he very famously didn't eat.
Oh, well, I actually went for porridge with water, thinking about that's probably a way to have.
Yeah, but also he didn't eat. And so when he did eat, he often ate whatever he felt like, as opposed to something that was healthy for you.
Oh, I didn't realize this.
So he might
this.
Just eat like nachos.
Oh, okay. And then not again for 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't eat a lot. So, Prince. Yes, Prince is here in spirit. And in fact, let me see. I have stuff of Prince. Can you see over there? Can you see there? There's Prince.
Where am I looking?
The door.
Oh, you do.
On the door. Yeah, I do. I do have lots of Prince stuff. If you can look here on my wall, can you see his emblem thing?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, this is going to be a silly question, but I was going to say, have you seen him live? But I assume the question should be, how many times did you see him live?
3.
Did you go to the intimate gig he did in London?
We went to one that was in a tiny, I think it was in Shepherd's Bush somewhere. Went to that. My husband got me tickets for when he did all those nights at the O2, and my seat number was A1. He was literally this close to me, and then he came to our side of the stage, and I started screaming all the things I wanted to tell him before he left, because I had so many things to tell him, and I kind of blacked out. I was screaming, and he left. He never came back to my side of the stage. The lady next to me was like, you scared him away. I was like, I'm sorry. My husband was like, you were in a trance. You were talking about your childhood in India. You were talking about the first guy you kissed. He's like, he was literally 3 feet away trying to play his guitar, and he left. He did not come back the whole concert. So that went well.
He needed those headphones.
Yeah, he needed those things, exactly. The first time I saw him was I'd come here on a scholarship from India to study. I went to university and I was supposed to get married, like arranged, like your parents pick someone, then you meet them and then you decide, like a blind date.
Yeah.
A blind date.
Forever.
Which ends in marriage. Yeah. But it's not forced, So there was like, they were back and forth and back and forth. But then I got the scholarship and my mother was like, oh, this is a very good university. You must go. She was unhappy, but she was like, you better go. Because in India, education is everything. And also, I wasn't that academic. So they were like, well, my mother used to say, well, you're not getting good. You're not so, I used to get good grades. She said, you're not so serious about studies. I suppose you have to marry then. That was the two choices. So.
And what was the scholarship for?
To do a bachelor's degree here.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
It was a big one, wasn't it? It was the university.
I mean, Yeah, I went to Oxford to do PPE.
Wow.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, it was great. It was incredible. I mean, it changed my life. But you had to do it in 2 years instead of three. That was great fun. But I made some great friends. And on my birthday, the last year before and then, of course, turns out I didn't go back to India. I went on to do a PhD and stuff. But the last year, so when we were finishing, 93, June, Prince was playing in London.
Oh.
It must have been at Wembley. And Simon, my friend Simon and Elizabeth, and they all got together. And we were students. We didn't have a lot of money. And they bought me tickets to see Prince. But the thing is, Simon and I had a tutorial with Mr. C.C.C.C.W. Taylor in ancient philosophy. And because, we had to do that as part of philosophy. And so I said to Simon, but what about our tutorial? And Simon said, well, we're going to have to tell Mr. Taylor we've got to go to a concert. And that was the concert where Prince had the yellow outfit where his ass was out.
Right. Yeah.
So we went to him and we said, Mr. Taylor must have been 118 years old. And every tutorial you went, he would say, would you like a glass of sherry before we start? And I was from India. I was like, no, I will not have alcohol before I read you my essay. Thank you, sir. I just couldn't understand. He was such a lovely man, but so old. So we said to him, I said, Mr. Taylor, we can't come to this thing on Friday because I'm going to see a concert. He said, concert in London. And I said, yes. And then Simon said, it's Prince. And he said, Prince, are you going to visit the member of the Royal Family? And I thought, English people are fucking crazy. I remember thinking that they're fucking crazy. So we said no. And then we showed him the poster with the yellow outfit. And he said, quite unsavory. But he gave us the tutorial off, and I'd never been to London.
Oh, good for him.
I mean, I'd flown into Heathrow and then taken a bus to Oxford. And I remember we came, and I'd been to London when I was 11 with my mom, but she was so freaked out that the whole time that we were going to get lost and then mugged and then robbed. I don't think I was focusing. But anyway, I came with Simon, and we went, and there was the tube. And I was like, oh my God, Simon, this is so scary. And then there were these people that were jumping over the turnstile and not paying the thing. And I was like, is this India? I love it. And Simon was like, no, this is London. And then we got to the thing, and our seats were so far away. I'll tell you how big Prince was.
I mean, he's small enough even if you're up close. So this must have
Prince
been a nightmare.
This big. This is how big Prince was. But I couldn't believe, I'd never been to a concert in my life.
Right. Ever.
So then, and then suddenly everyone at some point was doing this with a flame.
Oh.
And I didn't have that, but I used a smoker, of course I was. So I took out matches and I was like, ksah, ksah, ksah. And Simon was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm like, ksah. And so we did that the whole time. It was so fun. It was great. I've never had a sort of creative inputs like that because Prince meant so much to me.
I love the story. I love how big a fan you are. And I love that Oxford University is exactly how I thought it would be.
It is. Well, at least CCCW Taylor is a great, he's wonderful. I wrote to him. I went back there for a gig and then I thought, I wonder how he is. So I went into my old college and left him a note and he wrote back.
No. Wow.
Also, Prince was very funny. Have you seen his interviews?
No.
His comic timing's out of control.
Oh, really?
So he was very funny, and in his small gig that we went to, he did a lot of jokes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I would have never have pictured that with him.
Yeah, no, he was very funny, very funny. And he's a classy guy. This is such a bad story, but it's so good. And I'm worried that if I say it, it'll just be too gross. Are you going to get grossed out? I hope not.
Let's find out.
Okay. It's a trigger warning.
Okay.
Anyway, fine. So I had a gig and I was doing something and the person who helped me pick up my kids from school, I went to get one, she went to get one. Oh, I went to get two, she went to get one, came to me and knocked on my door and said, oh my God, have you heard? Prince passed away.
Oh.
And I was like, what? And she said, yeah, because she knows. So I was like, that's bad, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, then I had a gig, and the gig was here in Camden. It wasn't at Camden Comedy Club because I don't want anyone to know what the gig was. This is such a bad story. Anyway, but I guess that's what podcasts are for, right? To say something. Anyway, and so I went to this and I was very troubled, but I was troubled up here and here and here. I hadn't yet got here.
Right.
I hadn't yet connected to all the things Prince meant to me when I was 16-year-old. I also think as a 16-year-old in India, in some ways I felt very different.
Mm.
And I think, so I hadn't gotten to that level yet of understanding how much I was, and my husband loves Prince and he was sad. So, you know, it was just this level of grief. Get to the gig. It's dark, whatever. I'm like first after the break.
Right.
So I'm waiting and then I'm doubling up. So I've got to go. So I'm sitting there, blah, 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 blah. Kind of a, it's like open mic-y. And that's fine. As in not open mic-y, but new material, I should say, not open mic-y. And then I feel kind of uncomfortable. So I kind of shift in my chair. And I'm very sad. You have to remember this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel, I get up. I've spontaneously had my period, which can happen to women when they're very unhappy. And I've bled all over this chair. And then I sit down again. I'm like, son of a bitch. Because there's no way I can get on stage. This guy is now saying my name.
Oh my God.
And this was, 2016, was it? Did he pass away in 2016?
Yeah.
It's not like, I wasn't someone who could be like, oh, by the way, I'll just go on later. Like now I might even say that.
Yeah.
I was sitting on this chair like, and then I understood, because this has happened to me in the past where if I'm very unhappy, it happens to women a lot. If you're very unhappy, you'll just start bleeding. And so, and I shouldn't laugh, but I was like, I'm going to have to get up off this fucking chair. And I didn't want, and there were other people outside, other comics, and that was where everyone was sitting. I didn't want someone to come and sit on this chair, did I, Jake? So I was like, right, send the thing. You know, have you ever had this, and I know you have because you're a stand-up, where you're so stressed by something that everything in your head is just static?
Yeah.
So I thought, I thought, okay, fine, I'm going to deal with this, I'm going to deal with this. And when was it, April time? So it's not like I had three sweaters on or something. So what I did was I contemplated holding the chair and going on stage and making it part of my act. And I thought that doesn't work because that's never part of my act. I'm not that kind of comic.
I don't think anybody is.
I could be a character. And I thought, what am I going to do? So what I did was I looked around and there was menus on paper
at this place. God.
I just grabbed 4 or 5, stood up, just stuck them to the bottom of the seat, hoping for the best, got onto stage in a way that's quite easy, actually. You know,
right.
Just get on stage today, did my set, just didn't look at the chair, just didn't look who was sitting on the chair, just did not observe. And I just was like, the fuck, I don't know. But hopefully some of it had just...
Oh my God.
Because I was turbo bleeding, you don't understand. And then sort of went off stage without sort of showing them my back, and then didn't even say bye to the promoter, just kind of ambled out of the door and fled.
The whole time during that story, I was thinking, I don't know where it's going to go. And then when it went there, I was thinking, how do I handle this? And then I got the only reassurance I had was when I said to myself, Jake, even Parkinson would not know what to do with this story. But ultimately, all we know is you bled and you fled.
But I will never forget that spontaneous. It's that much stress. Your uterus is like, fuck this.
Whoa.
Oh, my God. And actually, I had another gig. So what I remember I did was I got out. I don't live far from Camden. I couldn't get in an Uber. I couldn't do anything. I was literally, I was like, what am I going to do? Yeah. So I just kind of. I texted the person, like, sorry, can I go a bit later? They said yes. I walked until I thought I might have dried out a bit and then got an Uber, went home, and kind of wouldn't sit on the seat of the Uber. Was sort of like this, you know, holding my ass elevated above. Because I just, fuck. It wasn't like, you know, like sometimes all women have had that happen, but they haven't had this kind of Niagara Falls situation. I got home, I'll never forget that. Anyway, I don't know if you can edit this out, but I just feel like it's such a big part of the sadness I felt.
And a warning for anybody when Jack Nicholson dies. Steer clear of Sindhu.
Oh, my God.
There's another knock at the door. It's your fictional choice for this evening, the final guest to turn up. Can't wait to see where this goes. Let us know, Sindhu, who's at the door.
Oh my God, look. He's great. He's very small. So we better just, oh, lift him up, put him here. How are you? He's great. And do you know who this is? Jake, I'm sure you know who this is. This is SpongeBob. Do you know SpongeBob SquarePants?
Yeah, but after the last story, I'm worried what you're going to use the sponge for.
SpongeBob, don't listen to him. He's just, don't listen to him. He didn't bring Patrick this time. No, it's SpongeBob. SpongeBob, who I love.
And these are incredible choices to do. When did you first become aware of SpongeBob? Is this for your children or for before this?
Well, I have nieces, and it was before I had kids. And I one day was in India, and I was talking to my niece, and she was distracted by, okay, I love cartoons. Right. But SpongeBob, you should know that before you came along, there was other kinds of cartoons, and I never liked SpongeBob. I don't know if you're aware, there's a very stupid cartoon called Peppa Pig, which is a pig that dances and does normal kid things. There's no escapism in this cartoon, SpongeBob. This is just the worst child behavior in a fucking pig who has its eyes and nose and face all on one side. So the Pablo Picasso has made this pig. This is complete bullshit. I never watched that stuff growing up, and I certainly didn't watch any of the nice Clifford dog shit. I used to watch Tom and Jerry exclusively because, and Roadrunner, and, you know, the kind of stuff that had edge and violence. Edge and violence, that's what you're looking for. And I always liked, like, a little bit of violence, a little bit of craziness, you know, that kind of thing, growing up when I was little. And then I didn't watch cartoons for many, many years. And then, of course, I watched the Pixar stuff when it came out because that was great. But then one day, my niece was watching a cartoon. There was a lot of chaos on the television. And it was in those years when I was busy working, or I didn't really care about cartoons. And I looked at the television, and there was so much chaos. But there was you, SpongeBob, you. There was like a yellow rectangular guy with blue shorts. And I said to my niece, "Who is this?" She said, "That's SpongeBob SquarePants." And I was like, "Oh, SpongeBob SquarePants sounds about right." And then I said, "What? Is he under?" She said, "Yeah, he's under the water. He lives in a pineapple." And I was like, "I love this guy." Immediately. Because to me, that is the level of surrealism that makes you an interesting person.
Mm.
I once went to a dinner party.
Here we go.
I once went to a dinner party. Well, sort of call it corporate. And it was husbands and wives, and I was there. And you could tell no one was going to be interesting. And then the woman I was sitting next to me, this woman, much younger spouse of one of the people there, stunning, absolutely stunning. Men at the table were passing out. This woman was so stunning. She turned to me and said, "I would love to have sex with you, you know that." And so I said to her, "That's not going to happen, but... you are super interesting." In a similar vein to that, when I saw SpongeBob, and SpongeBob, not because I think you're into porn, when I saw this sponge in a pineapple, I was like, this is a cartoon to watch. And then I began to watch it, and then I realized that that SpongeBob is all of us. Because, well, think about it. Have you watched SpongeBob?
Yeah.
So SpongeBob is full of self-doubt, constantly trying to improve himself, limited by his own tendencies towards, I can do this and I can run 100 miles, but I can't. He's got that job he doesn't really like with that mean boss, and he knows he could do better, but he can't because he's limited by his human or his sponge, you know, qualities. I mean, I'm always trying to do things, but I've been fucking trying not to eat sugar for 7 days for 11 years. It's not worked. But I think about it all the time. I think I'd be so much better. And if you've, and you know, SpongeBob's always coming up with schemes to improve himself, schemes to improve things. And also he's a fundamentally sociable guy. I mean, Squidward is so awful.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, this guy's fundamentally social, as I think all of us, I mean, as I think I am, and I think all comics are fundamentally social. Some of them just don't know how to express it. but they are, you know, fundamentally social. And then the thing about SpongeBob that really speaks to me is that, as I mentioned earlier on this podcast, he's got a friend who's a fucking idiot, but he can't get rid of him.
Which Patrick. Is the classic comedy duo.
Yeah.
Of a friend that's friends, one of them is stupider than the other on the surface. However, you actually say, who's worse of the two? The stupid one or the one who is so stupid he won't get rid of his friend who's holding him back? So you go, they deserve each other.
Boom. And so SpongeBob has all the anguish, all the ambition, all the anxiety, all the self-doubt, and all the well-meaning bonhomie that I think the human condition is about. I love SpongeBob so much. And he lives in a pineapple under the water.
I will never watch SpongeBob the same again.
You won't.
Or Gig in Camden. So do you still watch SpongeBob?
If I can. But the kids have grown up out of it, and my youngest doesn't like it because she's a YouTuber person.
Oh, I see, right, yeah.
But I was once involved with a charity that somehow related to that, I managed to get a cruise with my two younger kids from Italy on a boat that was all SpongeBob and Squidward and everybody else.
What? Like a Nickelodeon cruise?
It was a Nickelodeon, that's what it was called, Nickelodeon cruise. I loved it. You know, I loved it because SpongeBob genuinely was like SpongeBob. I did get a photo with Squidward, who was not friendly at all. I was like, fuck off, you two. No, but I like SpongeBob. I like his philosophy in life.
I must admit, very guilty of having just completely watched SpongeBob with what was being delivered on the surface, part of the pun. But...
look at all the... Again, with Prince, with SpongeBob, always breaking the mold. Always, and even Jack Nicholson, you know, he wasn't the leading guy who then, you know, went on to have some big, horrible, like Marlon Brando, some big, horrible personal life. He was like, but more with Prince and with SpongeBob. I mean, in SpongeBob, the guy who runs the crab cake, you know, his daughter is a whale. Do you know what I mean? The whole thing is a lesson in you don't ever say who you can and can't love. Don't say, you know what I mean? Just, hey, here we are. Take things as they are and learn to live with them. Don't say you should, then don't label me. Just because I'm a whale doesn't mean I can't be a crab's daughter. Fuck off.
Cindy.
Yes.
Right. Just so we get a sense of a dinner party with Cindy, I've got 7 quick fire questions.
Okay. Here we go.
Just so we can get a vibe. Ready?
Yeah, we're so ready.
Beer or wine?
Tequila, no. wine. I don't drink beer. I don't even drink wine, but whatever, wine.
Wine. Whiskey or gin?
Oh, whiskey, hello.
Great. Meat or vegetarian?
Vegetarian.
Starter or dessert?
6 desserts.
Music or games?
Music.
Culture or politics?
Culture.
And signature dish?
Chocolate mousse.
Lovely. Great answers. And I know what you mean, beer or wine. I'm a neither beer nor wine person.
No, I drink liquor.
Yes. And whiskey. Great shout. What I'm saying is after this, I'm coming over.
Please. I can't wait. Please come. And bring Mr. Parker. Well, we have two dogs who might be scared of
him. Oh, yeah. That might be an absolute nightmare. Bloodbath. Yeah. It'd be like Camden. Right. So we now go through the three that I've chosen. You may agree. You may wonder where on earth it came from. Here we go. For Alive, I went with Carol Burnett.
Oh, yes. I do like her. And I have talked about her. And yes. Great choice.
The other choice may be a bit of an odd one. And I've got two last names here, so I'm not sure which to use. Is it, and I may say this wrong,
Jaya Bachchan.
Jaya Bachchan, right? Butchered that. because she's in the film which you considered to be one of the most perfect films.
Silsila,
which she married the star of, and she's now a politician. And so I did some research, and I just thought that somebody who would stick with I thought would stick with you.
Yeah, so that's her husband, the guy. And so if I invited her to dinner, I'd poison her. So then there would be a vacancy, and then I could step in. And also, in that movie, she's his wife, but his mistress is Rekha.
Oh.
And she was a dark actress, and she was still beautiful. That's why she was my idol, because I was always, my mother used to say, you are so over dark and over tall. And so, and she was called Chandani, the mistress. And I was 11, and I was like, I'm going to name my daughter mistress, name my daughter Chandani. I hope my daughter is someone's mistress. No, I didn't think that. So I'm going to name my daughter Chandani. So one of my daughters, her middle name is Chandani.
Lovely.
I take my movies very seriously.
Very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Which is even more praise for Jack Nicholson having made it. Okay.
Big time.
Dead. You thought I'd go for Prince. I didn't. I wish I had. I went with, and I might have to explain it, I went with P.G. Woodhouse.
Oh, I do like him.
And you said about how your dad used to quote him a lot growing up, and maybe he that's still why you're does. Into comedy. That's lovely. Yeah. So
I do like P.G. Woodhouse, and I still think, and given that I have a crush on Hugh Laurie, I do massive crush. Anyway. I'm a big fan of P.G. Woodhouse. I also think P.G. Woodhouse's ear for writing comedy, economy of words and the rhythm of words is just outstanding. Outstanding.
I'm a bit of a novice with his, could you consider yourself a novice? I'm just not really, I need to have read more of his, and I will do.
And it's hard now because there's so much else to do with comedy. When I was growing up in the summer and there was either read India Today magazine or P.G. Woodhouse, you're like, P.G. Woodhouse.
And for fictional, I went for With Nail from With Nail and I.
Oh my God. You know, that was the first English movie outside of Sound of Music that I watched. And
no.
And it's my friend from Ireland, Donal O'Hagan. Donal, if you're listening to this, man, I'm giving you a shout out. He showed me that movie and I was like, this might be the funniest shit I've seen in my life. I had never seen anything like it in my life, but it was so funny. It was achingly funny to me. Like, I remember my chest wall hurting with funniness. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I love it. Still gets me now whenever people use the meme of the two of them stood in the rain. It's... No matter the context, it's always hilarious. Whether it's we've left the EU by mistake.
I know. It's so good. And I think it was a perfect movie to counterbalance the cool Britannia that I came to work in. Because I came here in 91 to study, and then I left. I went to America. You know, big. That's a country of aspirations and aspirational. Yeah. And then I came here to work in 97. And cool Britannia was everywhere, and you know, there was Meg Matthews and those two brothers, the singers, who are they? One has the funny eye, Oasis. There you go. Those two fellows, and you know, one used to call the other one our kid, and this and that. And you know, it was all cool Britannia and Betsy Kensit. But then you had With Nail and I, there's all these references pouring out of my head, and I had no relationship to these things. I just come here to work. But With Nail and I showed you the side of Britain or British or whatever that as a comic I can connect to now and I could connect to then, even though I didn't know I was a comic yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So it's that kind of slightly, you can't, you know, it's the humor, it's the dark humor, dark humor, the sort of nothing's working out for me, fuck it.
Yeah, despite all the other references you mentioned before, that is actually the stronger and more truthful Britain.
100%.
That is it.
Yeah, and you were that in the 90s. You know, you had Tony Blair's government. You had the massive thing from the finance, you know, when the Glass-Steagall in America, and I'm not going to bore you to death, with the Big Bang here and stuff. You did. There was a huge economic, you know, boom. And But that thing, that with Neil and I thing, that's, I think, quintessential. Yeah. It's a good choice.
Oh, thank you.
Great choice.
No points, but great effort.
Yeah, I would, by the way, I would love to come to dinner party with those three.
Okay, I'm afraid to say, Sindhu, we have the toughest part of the podcast, where you and I now have to pick one of your guests to come to the ultimate dinner party, which you will also be at. It will be you, all the guests I've had on, and each of their choices. So now we have to whittle it down from Jack Nicholson, Prince, and SpongeBob.
Right. I would... Are you going to pick one or do I
We'll pick together. We'll pick together. I think... Well, two reasons. I think Prince. And it's the way that your connection with him. Also, I'll pause everybody at the dinner table while you explain to him the Camden story.
Which I think you'd have a lot of respect for. I think that's a great show. I think Prince is the kind of person everyone wants to be with him, but I don't think Prince wanted to be with everyone. Prince was very private. So I think Prince would show up at a party. He'd be super cool, but he wouldn't say much. He was very shy. He was very introverted.
Right.
And when I have dinner parties, my rules are you must have, if you're going to invite couples, fine, but either one in a couple or each other person that you invite should have something to say both for themselves as well as for others. Because people who attend your dinner party should leave thinking, fuck, that was a great party. And that only happens when the people at the party are willing. It's like a box. What you put into it is what you get out of it.
Right.
And I think with Prince, my fear is that he was such a genius. He was so, and he wasn't that extroverted. He might not say anything. He may just sit there and be observed.
That's such a good way of looking at it. For the good of the party, actually.
I don't know if it's him. I don't think it's him.
In that case, prove me wrong. And I assume the second choice?
Well, it's a
big... Or your first.
It's a big company. It's very close between Sponge and Jack because Sponge is the perfect guest in that he has no filter. This is what most of us are like after 35 tequilas, you know. But he's like that anyway. So he'd be there like, oh, you know, da-da-da, da-da-da, like, or if Paul Chaudhry was there, he'd say, why is your mustache that curly? What's the message? You know what I mean? Like this kind of thing. And so I think that's great at a party because it's like explosive. You don't fucking know what he's going to say to who. But the person I would like to bring, I would bring to your super party is Jack Nicholson for the following reason. He's gone to a lot of parties. He knows a good party. He knows a good party. And I bet you this guy would have a reaction to things around him, would have a way with the ladies, would have a comment on the guys. He would bring so much what my mother used to call Jojo, but she meant mojo. I have a big Jojo for this. And I would say mojo, mojo. I think he has big party mojo. And he would wear a tux and he would be well-dressed.
Flawless arguments. Ultimate dinner party, Jack Nicholson.
Yay!
It's going to be a good night.
It's going to be a great night. I can't
wait.
You can
still tell the Prince story.
I mean, I've never told that story. Like, I've never said that to a person. Why would you? And now for some reason, I'm like, this podcast is a great place to tell this story to the world. But I've done that on a few other podcasts. On Lou's podcast, I said things I had never said before. And I think a podcast... I think it's a good it's a good thing to be on a podcast and you think, oh, this is the space for which this story was waiting.
Sindhu, thank you so much for coming on.
Anytime. And thank you for introducing me to Richard Parker, who is the world's most beautiful black one-eyed cat.
As it's his birthday, I thought that was the perfect place to end the podcast. Thanks again for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe and share on social media. I promise it does make such a difference. And I'll be back again next week with another episode. Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.